and then we'd actually have something to talk about. And he said, no, you can't do that. It'll set off all these fire alarms, and people will get all upset, and that would cause a big ruckus, so, you know, let's just meet for lunch. Well, that was kind of frustrating. So I started to realize that this is kind of a problem that, you know, affects a lot of people, so I started looking into it and prepared some notes and things. I thought some information you might find interesting. So the kind of overview of this morning is, I'm just going to spend a little bit of time just going over some of the technical detail, just to give a bit of background. I don't want to spend too much time on it. But basically, I'll explain kind of this concept of inter-business attack and how it affects us, and then how that relates to a lot of the current e-commerce architectures. And then what I really want to get into is, you know, the latest laws, current implementations of this, and then jump into asking the panel questions. There's another CSO that's going to be joining us. He's the guy that gave the keynote this morning, so he's probably a little bit late. Paul Simmons, the CSO for Global Information Systems. And hopefully he'll be here fairly shortly. Okay, to start this off, I'll talk just briefly about one of the most important attacks that we deal with, you know, this day and age, and it's the SQL attack architecture. And the reason it's important is because it's the one attack that is very dangerous, and it crosses all the boundaries, and it basically allows you to just, you know, shoot through any IDS or any firewall system that we have. And it affects so many components of the things that we're trying to deal with within our corporations. I've broken down the various categories to show, you know, which part of the URL attacks which part of the corporation. So you can see, you know, the HTTP, whether it's, you know, SSL. As we all know by now, SSL is basically a hacker's friend because it totally hides everything that he's doing. Then you choose, you know, what server you want to attack, what web application you want to attack. And then finally, the most critical part, you know, the part that affects the database query, which we all know is, like, you know, probably the single largest danger element that we deal with right now. If anyone needs any further technical information on that, there's about 20 guys giving some really good info on that this weekend, so I'm not going to touch on it too much. So where that leads us today is what I'm trying to show in this diagram here is how it affects our business, because we don't have these little teeny businesses that are, you know, self-contained anymore. A very standard architecture is, you know, company A has their web application, their e-commerce catalog, their parts, and all of their company information wrapped up in a web application, and a customer comes there, finds out about your site, wishes to purchase products from your site. But then once they actually make that decision to purchase, you know, they have to go to some place where the Visa card is entered and given. And that usually disappears off into the void, usually to company B, which is your, you know, financial partner. And, you know, the actual customer database and credit card information usually never really resides on your site. It's always somewhere else. So the issue that kind of brings to light is, you know, you have, you know, this web application that resides on your site, but, you know, the most critical element of it and what you need to test and protect lies on someone else's site. So that kind of presents a dilemma for, you know, company A trying to protect it. There's three people involved in this situation, you know, the customer, company A, and company B. So, you know, to protect everybody involved, and one of the reasons why this is kind of a personal issue to me is, you know, as a consumer, I'm very concerned about, you know, my information. Not so much that somebody's going to hack it, but because it's so hard to recover. I mean, the thing that scares me about identity theft these days is not so much that someone's going to get it, but that it's so hard to get it back. So I do have a personal concern about this issue. So then there's company A, who, you know, is doing a very good job of providing services that I want to purchase. And then there's, you know, usually the financial center that, you know, stores all my data. So somehow, me as a consumer, I have to trust that the administrator of company A and the business unit of company A is going to cooperate with the administrators and business unit of company B and do a very good job of testing and securing all the ends of the system. Now, Mr. Hacker in Canada, he doesn't care. I mean, he's just like, you know, there's a web application, I'm going to go in, and all of these inter-business issues don't really matter too much to me. So that's kind of the scenario. And what I've noticed is lately, and maybe you guys have experienced it as well, there's a high level of paranoia amongst administrators because the laws that we now have are very extreme. So I just want to, I'm going to kind of take a look at some of the laws, give you some samples of, you know, various things and what affects us from a legal perspective and how this affects people doing their jobs. Or even more what I see, how it affects people not able to do their jobs. So we all know that, you know, your job is securing the company, okay? And, you know, a standard job is protecting the perimeter. Okay, we all got a pretty good concept of that. The problem is now, you know, what is the perimeter? Companies are no longer atomic. So, you know, it used to be very easy. You had your company land, you put a firewall around it, you had some guy that would watch that, and that was it. That was the end of your responsibilities. And from a certain perspective, that was a far easier job than what we have now. Now, you know, you have subcontractors, you have networks that are interconnected, and most importantly, you know, usually the most important and dangerous links linking your network go somewhere else, usually to a financial center. So now this job is infinitely more complicated. And not only is it more complicated technically, but it's complicated because of laws that are now in place. And so that brings us to kind of where we are today. So here's, you know, your legitimate need, your administrator's legitimate need, any administrator who has, you know, the job of protecting the enterprise, you know, definitely has, you know, these questions in mind. You know, what other companies host your information, you know, sharing that data with another company. You know, sometimes it's one way. Sometimes you just push all your data straight out and hope that they protect it. You know, sometimes you need it, you know, it's both ways. Company's reputation these days definitely depends on this perception. You know, web hacks are, you know, very public and embarrassing, but they're really usually not very harmful. Someone hacks into your site, you know, they change the page, it's annoying, it's embarrassing to find it on Monday morning, but really it's usually not that dangerous. The dangerous people are the ones that don't get caught. The dangerous people are the ones that hack into your database server and take their credit cards and you never knew they were there. And that's the real concern. And when that comes to light, then, you know, you have to send a message to, you know, all your customers saying, you know, there's been an exposure, do you want to change your data? And no company really digs that. You know, where does your email go? A lot of companies these days don't even have their email on their company site. You know, it's off-sourced to another party. So, you know, how secure is that link? So the real question is, you know, your company's administrator, what is his abilities, you know, legally to assess that link? And at this point in time, it's like you're pretty much, you know, trusted to say, okay, yeah, I took care of it. And if that's the answer that you're left with, you're completely trusting him. But if anything ever goes wrong with that, you know, you're the one that's going to take the bath for it. It won't be their name that ends up. Most likely, it'll be your name because it was your email addresses. So here's basically, legal requirements for notice. You know, we have this new law. Any person or business that owns or licenses computer data that includes personal information shall disclose any breach of the security of the system following discovery or notification of the breach in the security of the data to any resident of California whose unencrypted personal information was or is reasonably believed to have been acquired by another unauthorized person. I'm not always sure how you're actually supposed to know that, but I'll let Steve comment on that in a moment. So this is one of the first things that we now have to deal with. You know, this causes us a lot of problems. You know, this one thing right here has actually caused people to actually increase their budget and go purchase new products because nobody wants to get caught with this. For purposes of this section, personal information means an individual's first name or first initial and last name in combination with any one or more of the following data elements. When either name or data elements are not encrypted, social security number, 2, driver license number, 3, account number, credit, debit card number, combination that requires a security code, access code, password, that would permit access to an individual's financial account. So that's really, you know, the jewels. We're trying to, you know, kind of distinguish between the really important attacks and the attacks that are, you know, just annoying. Steve, why don't you answer that?
Yeah, this new California statute is creating people concerned. The idea is if you think that you might have been hacked, And if any of this data could have gotten out, you have a duty immediately to send email to every customer in California telling them that this might have happened. You no longer have the right to keep it inside the company and investigate. Technically, if you find out there's been a hack, and it shows you how bad laws are written. This is one of the scary things to a lawyer. You notice it says if either element is unencrypted. So if the name is in clear text, and the account number and the password are well encrypted, it doesn't matter. If you have a hack that could have gotten into a hack or any breach, and they could have gotten customers' names with encrypted credit cards, you technically have the obligation to tell every customer in California who might have been affected that this happened under this law. And if you don't, the danger is you then get sued in a class action saying you failed to disclose data you're legally required to disclose, and that then costs a bunch of money. And yes, there have been a few disclosures under this law so far. And I like taking questions, although I don't want to get too lost on time.
Well, I was going to save questions for the last 30 seconds of the show, but let the games begin. You have a question?
What if you hosted Adam's data?
If you have California customers, the law applies to you. Now, if you're a foreign country, if you're a Vietnam corporation and you only do business in Vietnam, you probably don't care if the California Attorney General sues you. But if you're a company that has a few bucks in California, those bucks are exposed if you don't comply with the law.
We checked with our mailroom, kind of the mailing of the 200,000 people that were compromised. Mailing would be $100,000 for the first mailing.
Except for you don't have to mail them. You can do newspaper ads, you can do television ads. You have any choice of communication mechanism you want if it's over a certain number of users.
Only if it costs you more than $250,000. And he's right, it's an important thing. The law says right in it, if it costs you more than $250,000 to do notification the regular way, you can then do newspaper ads and all that. But I happen to think that's a nutty thing. $250,000 is a lot of money. And you can also do email notice, by the way. So if you have good email addresses, that'll also cut down on the cost.
$250,000 or $50 for a newspaper ad.
Well, no, because you can't do a $50 newspaper ad. You have to prove that you can't do notice properly. You have to do a real newspaper ad. I mean, arguably, I'm not saying you'd have to spend $250,000, but if you didn't spend $100,000 of trying to let people know, because you claim it can cost you $250,000 to let them know the right way, you'd probably, you see what it is. The law doesn't say it, the law says $250,000, but it's a value trade-off. It's not going to make sense to get away spending $50 when you claim it would have cost you $250,000.
Adam? Go ahead, you in the front.
Is Adam all you
have? Sure. Is this a private right of action, or does the California Attorney General have to do something?
Actually, the law allows customers to sue.
That's right.
The Attorney General doesn't sue. The customer does.
Civil code, not criminal, so state attorney general is not going to be involved.
Well, no, that's our whole 17200 law we have in California. The attorney general can sue for anything that's an unfair business practice on the civil side. The civil division of the state attorney general could sue you for damages instead of it being a private class action attorney. We have a whole thing going on in California whether that law changes or not, but right now that could be either. But it's civil, not criminal, either way.
Okay.
It's important to note, you mentioned it, you just kind of recently briefed over, it's not necessarily only a hack, it's any unauthorized access to this data.
That's coming up next.
Yeah,
got a few more slides, and then we got about four more slides, and then I'm sure the questions will really start. So I'll take one more.
Can you clarify names and addresses are unencrypted, but the actual confidential data, like card numbers, etc., are encrypted? Is that still a disclosure issue?
If I'm your attorney, I'm going to try to argue. No, what else do they want to pay me for? But I don't have a pointer. You see where it says, right in the middle of the slide, when either the name or the data elements are not encrypted. So if I read those words, I got to tell you that it means if the name is unencrypted but the data elements are encrypted, that's exactly what the law means. Now, it's stupidly written, and I'm going to argue that it's stupid after the whole notice. But I'm not making it up. You see the words right there, and you have to be a lawyer to read those words.
All right, one more in the back there.
Does this law apply to state?
No, I don't think it.
Why not?
If it's okay, I'll answer that one, but I'll go read the law for a second while we keep moving forward and find a reason why.
All right.
I think you're right, but I got to look at it.
State must have been the because of the university. There's a student there that was compromised with the name, I guess. She got two letters saying that the flood data would be available.
Okay. All right. One more in the back.
This is a comment, or is that?
I'm going to start charging.
This isn't just in California. There are already model law. There is a version of it that won't get through Congress this session, but probably will the next after that. Australia and New Zealand are working on their own versions of it. So consider this not to be some aberration that you're going to see go away, but this is California leading the way.
Very interesting.
Yeah. J.D. pointed out that there's a lawyer I was talking to long ago. Keep it to two sentences. Yes, when I give speeches and talk slower, I point out that while we come from California, I do, and I talk California, and we all joke that California is nuts. California is usually a leading indicator because 10% of the population of the money of the country. You can joke about it being nuts, but what the gentleman said is usually true. It's usually a future trend and not just a nutty California thing.
Okay, so now what this is a... sample terms of use. A lot of you have probably seen this. It's fairly typical between companies.
Purple's my fault. Purple's supposed to be the best part, not the unreal part. My fault.
All right. So violations of system or network security are prohibited and may result in criminal or civil liability. Examples of system or network security violations include, without limitation, the following. Unauthorized access to or use of data, systems, or networks.
Read really slow now. This is the good part.
Including any attempt to probe, scan, or test the vulnerability of a system or network, or to breach security or authentication measures without express authorization of the owner of the system or network.
Google it. There are at least 100 people. That's their term of use. I copied it from one site, so you can Google that exact term, and that people are using that one a lot.
Now, I don't know about you, but I've violated this rule myself about 3,000 times. So. And, you know, for legitimate purposes, I mean, basically every time I have to test one of those URLs, I'm violating this thing. I mean, there's no, if some customer comes to me and wants me to find out if their you know, SQL input forms are okay, there's really no way to get around that. So.
What's the tail end of that covering? When you're doing a test, you've got an authorization to do it.
Not always. Sometimes, I mean, it kind of depends on some of the that was just a sample, but sometimes it depends on, you know, what is the agreements between the various companies involved. Sometimes they're comprehensive enough to cover it, sometimes they're not.
One of the court cases we're going to come to was that exact thing. A guy works for company A, he's told by his client to hook up to company B. Company B has a competitor providing their server. He wants to make sure that his stuff's not going to get compromised when he hooks to B. He does a security scan on B. He gets fired by his customer and arrested for illegally probing B, even though his customer had told him to hook to B and he was doing it for a legit reason. He won the case, but that's one of the court cases we'll see.
Is that Mr. LeBlanc? Dave, is that you? All right, sorry. All right, next one. Whoever intentionally accesses a computer without authorization or exceeds authorized access and thereby obtains information from any protected computer if the conduct involved in interstate or foreign communication shall be punished as provided in subsection of this section. Does port scan and vulnerability scan obtain information from a computer? So I'll let Steve comment on this in a second. You know, one of my personal issues is, you know, what exactly constitutes information to lead to a compromise? To me, it's a fine line. We can get into arguing about this maybe later. Of, you know, what actually, how much data do you need to actually compromise a system, and how much data do you need to actually determine that you've probably got a problem and need to fix it? Because there definitely is a set of information that says, you know, hey, I got a problem, and then you can take that one step further, and you know, then you actually get access to the system. So,
don't they have to demonstrate damages under that law?
What's that?
Don't they have to demonstrate damages under that law?
Not this one. This subsection doesn't require, by the way, does my loud voice go to the back or should I use a mic? I don't mean to be rude. You're okay?
We're recording, so
oh. I got thumbs up from the people sitting there, but they say for recording they like it, so I'll pick it up. So much for the recording. JD, I have to use your mic.
Because I don't want to upset
my cord.
This particular subsection doesn't require damages, as we see when we get to the next thing, in an awful lot of circumstances. Now, this is not the one that they usually use. You'll see the next section, which is the one that A5, which talks about accessing a computer. But this one's important. According to the Electronic Frontier Foundation, I was the first attorney in the country to use this one in a civil case and get an injunction. I'm going to take a minute here to describe the case that's not listed. We had a client. They had a business partner who did all the computer servicing for them and who was actually a part owner of the business, who put in a time bomb on the computer because they were having a business dispute, and then sent a letter saying the computer's going to shut down in 30 days if you guys don't agree to do the business the way we want to do it. We went to court in California and convinced the judge that under this act, that was exceeding authorized access, because even though they were the business partner who ran the computer and provided the software, they didn't have permission to put a time bomb on it and claim the system was going to shut down if we didn't do what they wanted with the business. That's a published case. We got the injunction against them saying they couldn't do it. We didn't have to go to damages because it was a medical computer. But be careful, there are a whole lot of exceptions even under the damages. If it's a computer that has medical data on it, zero damages. If it's a U.S. government computer, zero damages. There are a few other things that are exceptions that I don't remember by memory, but they're on a slide later, zero damages. So you didn't even have to show dollars. And we got that injunction against them and threw our business partner out, and they got in big trouble for it. So this section, as we watched, exceeding authorized access has been defined, as you see in a later slide, as not complying with terms of use. It's four or five slides down. But if you have the right to access a computer, but then you try to look at a piece of data that the administrator didn't mean for you to look at, you're technically in criminal violation. If you have authorization to access a computer but try to do a port scan on it just for fun, you're exceeding authorized access. You could be a criminal violation. These sections are worth knowing about. I'm not trying to, they're not used that way. We'll get to the slide real late on. It's my favorite. Who's really going to sue you? That's my favorite slide in the whole thing. But be aware, these are weird things.
There's one thing that says, if the conduct involves interstate or foreign communication. So how does that fit in with what you just said?
If the computer's connected to a network, it's in interstate commerce.
If it is located within the same network and the same premises, you work at something you're not supposed to. How does that involve interstate communication?
The question is whether the computer is involved in interstate communication. So if the computer's on a network and has internet access, or if the computer is used at a company that's in interstate business, the test is whether the a protected computer when this law was first written was a U.S. government computer. In 1996, I believe, the definition of protected was changed to a computer used in interstate commerce. And basically, what I'll tell you is, if I was a criminal lawyer, I might defend a case on the basis it's not used that way, but as a civil lawyer, I haven't seen anyone ever in a civil case beat it on the basis that a computer was not used in interstate commerce. Because everybody has dial-up access, if not online access, and if they didn't, you probably wouldn't be there in the first place. So interstate becomes a non-issue to me as a civil lawyer. Yes, sir?
Yeah, the port scan and the information, how do they correlate? So you program the computer for the port scan, the information which you are getting is basically the port numbers. How do they compute the validation? It's like reading on a door here.
Yeah, this is the one. Oh, wait, no. May as well, where did it go to? Sorry, JJ and I shared these slides. Here it is. This is the one, intentionally accesses the computer and as a result such conduct causes damage. This is the one that they get port scans under when they do. A little different than exceeding authorized. And accesses and causes damage. Doesn't require that you get anything. It requires you access and you cause damage. Administrators then try to claim that you caused damage when you slowed down their system. So the guy who got criminally indicted was under this one, and all he did was access and allegedly cause it to slow down by accessing. You didn't have to get anything. So that's where this one becomes dangerous. You don't need to get something.
So the conclusion is by doing the full scan, you access the computer. Does it constitute an access?
Yes, that's access. You're touching it, so that's accessing it.
But, I mean, with the unsettled cases that are out there, that's going to be a question for the prior fact to determine, because is it Intel versus Tamani, which he was flooded with emails, and it slowed down, obviously, the system, but they said there was no trespassing channel there, so they dismissed the case.
Yeah, because they said that there isn't really damage. I got to tell you, you're right. On the civil side so far, and I like that side, the side says you're not really causing damage. The argument that you're slowing the system down enough that they can prove $5,000 worth No one who has a well-kept-up system is losing $5,000 from the slowdown or anything. So you're right. It's when the 5,000s had to be shown. Now, here are the exceptions. Medical diagnosis, physically injures a person, creates a threat to public health or safety, which, by the way, in this modern world of homeland security, I figure everything creates a threat to public health or safety. I haven't seen that one used by anyone yet, but someone's going to make the argument one of these days that if you do this to American Airlines, you're threatening public safety by port scanning American Airlines or certain government computers. So those are the exceptions. We don't need money. You're right on the money. You're cool. Without money, it becomes real dangerous. Medical computer. If you port scan a hospital computer, arguably no damage needs to be shown, and therefore the port scan alone is illegal because it's access. Yeah, and then you make a decision. There are lots of things. Clients, by the way, take lots of risks. They're going to hammer it out at trial. But they take them when they decide that something's worth hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars of legal fees, not when they think it's worth $5,000. There's no such thing as as I think everyone knows, no case is $5,000. There's no such thing as only spending $5,000 to get a legal principal. One question, I got to turn it back to JD. I'm sorry.
Regarding medical instruments, like a network appliance that's part of a hospital, can the vendor actually scan their own box if it's part of the agreement
No, because then it's authorized. And that's why we all have downloaded time bombs, and they're legal. Because every piece of Microsoft or everything beta software you download is what I call, as an old-time hacker, a time bomb, i.e. after 30 days it shuts down. But you agreed to accept something that's going to shut down after 30 days, and it's not authorized. If they didn't tell you this is going to shut down after 30 days, and you spent your time and you lost money when it shut down after 30 days, even though it was beta software, you can make an argument that was unauthorized access to your computer because you didn't give them permission to shut down a piece of software on your computer. So the authorization is the key to that one that you asked.
All right, so where are we at? Did we cover this one?
Yeah, I did. Well, forget the punishments. It's 1 year, it's 5 years, who cares? You don't want to do it unless you mean to do it.
1, 5. Trivial.
All I want to show is there's jail time that goes to these. 1 year for some, 5 years for others, and even an attempt, even if you're an incompetent hacker, the attempt is a 1 year.
Just one.
Yeah, skip that one too. Okay. Get enough questions, we don't need to go through.
All right. Do you go over this one in enough detail?
This one, I hope with me the material. Basically, if anyone wants the PowerPoints, JD and I are happy to share it. Give us a card, give us an email, send us an email, our address at the end, and you can have a PowerPoint. This is the case where the guy worked for a 911 police agency. They asked him to connect to a different police agency. He didn't like that his competitor's server was on a different police agency and didn't trust them to keep his connection good. So he scanned the competitor's police system, he had a contract to connect the two systems. But he didn't get written authorization from either side first. He got fired and he got arrested. He won the case on the basis that there was no $5,000 in damage when he port scanned the competitor. But no one wants to lose their job, lose their client, and lose the case without knowing that they mean to. Win the case, but I mean, I said win, lose would win without meaning to.
That case is published?
No, that the next case is all over the internet by that name because it was a lower court case in Georgia and it got a lot of press. And if you look up Moulton, M-O-U-L-T-O-N, you'll have no trouble finding 5 or 6 good articles describing the details of that case.
Okay, I'll just read this really quick and then I want Steve to comment on the competitor aspect. This is a civil case between two competitors. The court ruled there was no evidence of any damage. Why don't you comment on what makes the competitor, why that's...
We'll get there later.
All right.
No offense to us.
So what if court case is done? Travel versus Zephyr says that the concept of exceeded authorized access can be determined by looking at the terms of service, not just what people might say are reasonable expectations.
Yeah, this is the Federal Court of Appeals from Boston and everywhere else. I mean, First Circuit covers, I don't know, which 5 or 6 states back there. But this is 2003, and they say, no, you don't look at what's normal, you look to the terms of service. Terms of service say you can't port scan me, then you can argue that you exceeded access by port scanning me. That's what that stands for.
On a humorous note, this exceeds authorized access, meaning obtaining or altering data to the accessor is not entitled to obtain. Amazon. I think I was shopping in Amazon. I purchased a book. I put in. It was either the wrong name or the wrong zip code. Anyway, I got an error back, and actually got something that I wasn't even testing the system. It was just like a complete anonymous foobar, and got information I wasn't supposed to have. So it's kind of an interesting aspect of what this means to obtain. A lot of our work involves just looking for errors. Doing almost QA work. So. What does this mean? You get this information as a consultant. You get this information by accident every once in a while as a consumer. And what does this mean for our work and how we feel about what it is that we're trying to do?
I'm wondering about the question of intent. It seems that the way these laws are laid out, if you've got a host that you're responsible for, that through no intent that you have gets infected with, let's say, a virus. And then port scans a different host that somebody else controls. It seems like they could.
Intent is my favorite question, and it really depends on whose attorney is better. Because
good answer.
I spent the past 3 years worried about intent. So, it just depends.
That's the classic argument. Oh, it wasn't me. Someone hacked my computer. Use my system to download that kiddie porn, or to scan that machine, or perpetuate selling those shares short of Microsoft.
Sometimes I've seen it depend on whether or not there's financial gain as to what intent is. So,
statute has knowingly, intentionally, but in different places. Some things only have to be knowing. Some have to be intentional. Some have to be with intent to defraud. By the way, that law we're pointing to, except for the very first one I've noticed, is the federal law that covers everybody. I mean, we're looking at that 18 U.S.C. 1030. Sorry, that's lawyer talk, but that's the federal anti-hacker statute we've been looking at ever since the notice thing. Just so you know, that applies to everyone.
Well, we're running short on time. I want to go over this as like one of my favorite slides, and then David's got some really good. He's got a really good story that I want him to tell, and then I'll open it up for questions. So, number five, criminal enforcement agency, and we rank that as number five because that's probably the lowest frequency or your least danger of running into them. Number four is a good customer who suffers legitimate business monetary loss. Number three is a class of injured consumers, and that's kind of more directly related to the California law of making sure that you're notified, and if you don't notify and those people find out, maybe they'll come back to you. Number two, very, very common, I would almost argue that this is almost number one, is your worst customer. Someone who expects a lot of favors from you, but doesn't really pay you a lot of money, but if they perceive in any way that you are or could be their only source of money via litigation, then you're on their hit list. So any excuse that you've given them to harass you legally is a very strong possibility. I'll let Steve comment on the statistics of that. And then number one is your competitor. Any way that a competitor can leverage, some interaction to hurt you, number one concern.
I had one more, which is former employees.
Ah, that's good.
Along this list somewhere as well. Especially in Europe, there's a tradition that whenever you leave a company, you sue them by default. Especially in France, because you pay money into a fund for employment litigation. And yes, you're expected, actually, when you leave a company, to sue them. Well, you pay for the service, you may as well use it, right?
Nice. Can you comment on competitors?
Just briefly, number two comes off of a lot of years of my experience. I'll give you one short example. A case I handled years ago, a company had deposits of $1 million from 200 banks around the United States for this new software. They went into beta testing, saying they'd be out in 2 months. After 1 month, they said that the beta test would be delayed a year and a half. So you have 200 banks who've paid $1 million who now aren't getting something for at least a year and a half after the next month. Of those 200 banks, 10 of them sued. And every one of them had a problem. They were either about to be taken over by the federal government, they were going under, they were the problem ones. 190 banks had better things to do with $1 million than getting a lawsuit. And found other ways to take care of stuff, got a discount, got they had a business to run. They weren't interested in being in litigation. Every bank that sued had its own problem. A competitor is your biggest risk. Why? They care. The first use of the anti-hacker law ever was not against a teenager. It was up in Chicago, and it was another competitor time bomb situation. Because the person, the vendor who put a time bomb in the customer's computer and said, if you don't pay your bill, we're going to shut you off, and the customer said, no, we don't owe you the money because you're an incompetent fool. They had the time and the money and the energy and cared enough to go use their political contacts to get the county attorney up in Chicago to use the anti-hacker statute against the vendor. It wasn't used against teenagers. No one bothers filing criminal charges against teenagers unless it's the federal government trying to make a headline, because no one really cares about them. They care about people who cost them money. So competitor is your biggest danger, and the bad customer is number two.
Okay, so these are just, you know, some kind of questions that I'm, you know, thinking about myself, and I think affects, you know, the industry as a whole. You know, how do these laws help us? Are they really helping us? You know, and cooperation. You know, the paranoia level I see of, you know, administrators who are already overly paranoid. You know, is just, you know, it's just there. You know, a lot of times, I guess probably one of the things I see is that these laws affect the ability who are able to do the job and help with the job and do the repair work more than they affect the hackers. You know, I mean, every once in a while a hacker gets caught, but, you know, there's a lot of people out there doing things they shouldn't. But I think those are small in relation to, you know, the amount of good people out there who are trying to do work. You know, so who's best prepared to do all this work? I guess I kind of see, you know, corporations wanting to clamp down, protect themselves, and, you know, setting up these laws to do so, but since we have all these cross-business relationships, I see them as being not very effective. My opinion, exactly. I don't have it. So I just want to give you a quick insight into a great legal mind, me. I think it's off. I don't have one. All right, so. So here's the notes from Mr. Brower to myself, and it's kind of small, I can't make it bigger, so I'll read it. It says, don't be worried about the threat of legal action. Also consider that the people who are writing these laws often appear to have no idea what they are saying. So, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just important that we consider this because, you know, these laws are getting made, and if I see something that concerns me, it's, you know, something bad happens like 911, and then this legislation just gets rammed through like quick speed, and then what the hell does that mean? You know, and then we're stuck with all these, you know, implications. You know, I mean, a lot of times what we think is going to help us is, you know, a Band-Aid on something that, you know, hurts us, you know, long term. You know, there's more, you know, I still think there's more good people on the planet than there are bad people. So hopefully, as long as that's true, you know, we need to develop and think about and vote for laws that, you know, actually help us. So with that, I'm going to open it up. David, I'll start with you. I'd like you to comment on some of, you know, Siebel's opinions of laws. You started earlier this morning saying you have given a favorable opinion to laws, so why don't you...
Oh, some laws.
Laws can be, we find laws very useful, especially when we're working with partners and customers, and especially our partners and contractors. You need to give them access to your data, otherwise they can't do their job. So we just give them an NDA that this thick, and say, sign this if you want to work with us. and included in them is unlimited, uncapped indemnification clauses. And we find our partners are very good about doing background checks and making sure their employees behave when we can own them if they don't comply. And so be afraid of laws sometimes, especially when our lawyers use them. It's a short story. Some of these laws are really, I'm going to say they're dumb. I mean, CA 1386 gives no penalties from the government perspective. There's not a lot of incentive for anyone to really comply, especially when there's no definition of encryption. And if you have a ROT 13 file system, and the database is live on that file system, you're protected. You've done your work, so why bother? I'm much more worried in Sarbanes-Oxley. I can go to jail. What are you going to worry about? The law that sends you to jail as an executive, or the law that might cause you to let someone sue you? These are the things you need to worry about.
Number two,
exactly.
All right.
Yeah, let's get back to the question.
Wait, Dave, come back.
I'm sorry.
Dave has lots of great stories to tell, so ask him lots of questions.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
All this plausible NDA, will they go through instead of California? But I'm sure we have certain laws to protect the workers.
We do. I mean, it depends on where you are. Are you in California or are you in Europe? These NDAs are they're very specific on. And these are not, most of these NDAs are not with individuals, they're with other companies, and there isn't nearly as much protection in California or anywhere else for company-to-company interactions. And a lot of the information that we have in these NDAs is actually accepting liability that otherwise you couldn't accept, so. I'm sure there'll be some issues along the road, though.
Mr. Lowe. Hey, how you doing? Hey, I have a question. I want to comment from you guys. I know that I've talked to someone in the Justice Department, actually, in case anyone's interested, Richard Salgado, special prosecutor, who's convicted. Some people that I guess that aren't here, but specifically, his comment was involving foreskinning that not only did some of these laws apply, but his statement was that let's say that I used a hypothetical case, obviously more than 7 years ago, for scanning the entire address space of, say, China, okay? Not only could that, he was saying not only does criminal statutes apply to that, depending upon what systems you cross to get there, he was also saying you as a patriot could come into play because you actually could be looking like some type of cyber attack against a sovereign nation, thereby tricking the Chinese into thinking we're launching some kind of cyber attack. And I wanted your comments on that, particularly considering it came from one of Ashcroft's henchmen.
I really don't look at the solely criminal stuff that much. 18 U.S.C. 1030 is a weird statute, the anti-hacker, because it's civil and criminal, both. And therefore, I get involved in, as I said, maybe the first one to get involved in civilly. The Patriot Act is a full scary thing, but I can't comment on what you said makes perfect sense. But I don't study criminal statutes only, that's criminal statute only, so I sort of exhausted my knowledge.
Well, the main reason for asking that is because Ashcroft went and did kind of a dog and pony show, got a little bit of press, where he's going around and encouraging state and local agencies to actually use USA Patriot in ways that necessarily wasn't intended, and so, in my opinion, but actually to use it in the prosecuting cases that were happening at a state level.
I wasn't making political statements, but I'll disagree with you on one thing. I don't think you can claim that anything wasn't intended under that law. I think there are people out there who intended every bad thing you and I could imagine. What you mean is the way you and I think it shouldn't have been intended. Here's the thing. Mostly, I find that prosecutors have one thing. They don't try to prosecute cases where they look like idiots. They succeed sometimes, but that's not their goal. So, in general, if it's not a competitor problem, I don't think you're going to see a routine, legitimate port scan turning into a criminal case because it's not worth their time to make someone who doesn't look bad look bad. You also have to make people look bad in a criminal case. I think the cases you're going to see are ones where people do really stupid things or with really bad intent. mostly in criminal.
I want to clarify something on
that. Go ahead, Jay.
I know we talked a lot about port scanning, and one of the reasons I used port scanning in the example was because of how simple it is. The real issue is data, and a lot of our security testing involves getting access to sensitive data through the results of our testing. I mean, if you're dealing with testing for SQL vulnerabilities in particular, a lot of times you're going to end up with that data, maybe or maybe not, because what exactly you're authorized to do. Sometimes you may not know where that SQL query is going, and a lot of, let's say a company has three financial institutions they deal with, and you are testing their web application and you find a SQL vulnerability. Well, where exactly, which business did that data come from? You may not actually know, and you may not actually have authorization, and now you may be in violation of that law. So that's to me, that's the bigger issue than port scanning. But the port scanning is in the examples because it's a very common talked about subject, and it's so it's like the lowest common denominator. So if you can get in trouble port scanning, what does the next step mean? So the things that I just kind of wanted to think about is, if some of the people making these laws don't really know the ramifications of us, and we're the ones understanding the impact of this and what it means and what work we actually want to get done, I'm not up here saying this is the right answer, this is the wrong answer. I just want to say here's the current situation, think about it, voting time is coming up, these are our laws and our industry, and so it's just something we have to be conscious of, I believe.
I was wondering about non-disclosure. One of the things we just discovered, what we sort of knew about it, was the fact that we do a lot of non-disclosure with other companies. What we found out is people starting to use AOL, IM, and off-site free email, and things like Battlefish and translators, and they're taking this data, passing this data out to translate it or to pass it up. And I'm wondering if that's going to bring our corporation into a liability risk. Because in essence, we've said we're not disclosing this information, but yet, in essence, these people have done this for a job to either move information out to other companies. And if you read those license agreements that you deal with, like Battlefish and other things, they said they can use the data any way they want to. And so therefore, in essence, you've just disclosed this out to a bunch of people.
That's a good one.
That's actually a very big potential problem, because there's a very large employee education issue there. Not only that can actually really bite you in any sort of IP lawsuit with a competitor, potentially. If you can't show that you made a sufficient effort to protect that information, it's no longer considered proprietary or company confidential.
And that's what I was wondering about. Do you lose intellectual property rights and copyright rule?
Well, copyright, no, because copyright's copyright. However, you very potentially can lose intellectual property. And there was a case recently, it was mentioned on Security Focus, down I think either Arkansas or something, between two companies that make precision scales, about related to this sort of thing, where their information, customer information, was readily available to any employee inside the company on the corporate website. So it was no longer considered company confidential, according to the courts.
Hey, that's what business would be worried about. That's where the money's at. Mm-hmm. Intellectual property.
What about these email to fax services? You have to be very careful with this stuff.
That's a good point.
Every end customer signing a huge disclaimer. Where does it stop? I can get the people that I sell my instruments to say they accept all responsibility if they don't read it well enough. You want to really help them do that?
I don't understand.
I don't want to help anyone's lawyers write the law.
Right. Could you clarify? I'm not sure what you're trying to say.
If we're selling a network of lines, this is right. More hostile. We're talking about if information,
right.
Patient information is coming through there. The hospital, they'll be happy to sign saying they can accept all responsibility. If I scan them, am I really absolved of all responsibility? Even if I get authorized from the hospital, it's patient data.
Well, the question is, what do you do with that data?
Just access it.
If the hospital, my understanding, I'm not a lawyer, by the way, is that if the hospital gives you information and you comply with the other security requirements of HIPAA, then you are not in violation. And if you sit down at the customer site and you're scanning the computer and you're not looking at customer records and going off and posting them on the internet, that's not a violation. Just looking at information is not necessarily a violation of any of these rules.
HIPAA is its own thing, and it's so specific that I suspect you can't get off of it because it will probably be the posed liability. You can't get out of by your customer. I hate to be the one to say this, but I was warned. Someone else owns this room in 3 minutes. And they've asked.
All right. One last question. Any quick ones? All right, Adam.
How much does it cost to safely set yourself up if you do vulnerability scanning?
Get out of here. All right, thank you all for coming.
Can you only kind of have a question even here?
You said how much does it cost to set your operation up for
vulnerability? The policy has been $80 a month.
Absolutely, give me a card, I'll send it to you.